your intonation of music?
Well, I mean, if anyone calls me just a jazz drummer, they don't know who I am, because I've always played more than just jazz. I played rock, I played funk, you know, I played different styles of ethnic music. So to me, music is just music, you know. It's either I like it or I don't. So for me, I don't like to be categorized as just, you know, a jazz drummer or a fusion drummer. To me, that becomes a problem, because then people say, oh, well, don't call him because he just plays jazz. I mean, that's crazy. Most people now, most young musicians, and I consider myself a young musician, sort of, you know, I mean, we just play music. All the styles are blended together.
Aside from jazz, what do you listen to when you're driving the car, for example?
Well, I don't listen to much jazz in the car anymore. I used to, and sometimes I still put on John Coltrane and Miles Davis, but I still, you know, I listen to a lot of rock, you know. I like music with lyrics. I like music that has a melody that you can sing again. I'm like normal people as far as that's concerned. I mean, I like jazz when I listen to it, when it's really well done by, you know, excellent musicians. It's inspiring, but a lot of times jazz is just, you know, it can be self-indulgent too, just people soloing, just a solo. And, you know, when you're younger, you know, you're studying the technique and you're studying, you know, you're trying to find the style. As you get older, I think for me, you know, I like to expand. I like to hear things that are different. I don't need to hear somebody playing the same style of music as a third generation of that music, you know. I like to hear music that's fresh.
And some kind of jazz, like smooth jazz, basic jazz.
I mean, I don't listen to that. I mean, I've done smooth jazz records. You know, people call me. I just did one a couple months ago. I got called to play percussion on a smooth jazz record. And, you know, it's okay. I would never listen to that. That's not my style of music. I mean, you know, I think a lot of music sometimes becomes used to sell records, or that, you know, they say, okay, well, more people will buy this because a lot of people don't understand what music's about. So smooth jazz is more a functional music. It's more music that makes you relax. It's not really music that inspires you, I don't think, in my opinion. And it's not the kind of music that the musicians can search their soul. It's functional music. It's like sort of modern elevator music. It really is. Sometimes some of it can be better than others. I mean, again, nothing is always, always, or nothing is never, never, but, or always, never, or always, never. I mean, any combination there. I mean, there's always exceptions to the rule, but, I mean, in general, I find a lot of that music to sort of be just sort of functional music, just something to go to work to or relax when you come home for normal people, you know. It doesn't inspire, it doesn't lift your spirit, it doesn't make you see God.
But does smooth jazz is a good music for a driving car? Do you think so?
No, not for me. No, because I like, you know, I think anything that puts you to sleep or relaxes you so you don't have to feel anything is not necessarily good for anything, really. You know, I want music that makes me feel alive. I mean, I can be exhausted driving, you know, back from, you know, maybe 3 hours from a concert somewhere, and I'm exhausted, and I'll put on something that inspires me. Like, you know, I'll put on Jimi Hendrix or John Coltrane, or, you know, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, or, you know, even modern stuff I'll put on. For me, I like, you know, certain pop music, Oasis, Coldplay. And the next thing I know, my spirit is lifted. Smooth jazz just makes me want to go to sleep, you know. It makes me want to pull over to the side of the road and go to sleep.
Yeah, that's right, in some ways.
That's what it's for. It's to relax people. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but don't call it jazz, for one thing. Because to me, jazz is a music that is inspiring. It's people searching. Just because you have a saxophone doesn't mean that it's jazz, you know? And, you know, like, people call me, like I said, people call me for smooth jazz sessions, and I'll play them, you know, not just because I'm a whore or something, but, you know, I like playing any kind of music because I can always discover something. So if I get called for a smooth jazz session, there might be no drummer. It might be a drum machine. So I have to try to make that drum machine sound good by playing congas. To me, that's inspiring. I mean, for me, you know, it's a learning experience. But do I want to listen to that kind of music, especially if I'm not on it? Probably not. It's almost like they're throwing a punch at me, and I'm dodging it, you know?
There's not so much
reaction time.
Of course.
There's no react like that.
There is not so much about counting, memorizing, as much as it's about feeling some kind of rhythm in your body.
Well, you have to memorize things, so it's many things. It's an incredible thing that we do, you know? I mean, in some ways, you can look at it as like, well, you know, you can give a monkey some drumsticks, and he'll beat on a table, you know? So it's not rocket scientists. You know, it's not like this amazing thing that people do in other sciences. But when I think about the opposite way, it's amazing what we do. You know, we're constantly memorizing. We're solving problems right at that moment. We have to make many decisions. So, okay, where's this music going to go? Or, okay, who needs my help right now? You know, is everything, you know, it's constant. You're, like, living right in the present, but you're sort of, like, leaving your options open for the future, but you're also using what you did in the past, what you just played, as a basis for where the music could go. I mean, it's an incredible way of living time, you know? It's like, it's fantastic.
So, music is an expression of yourself?
Of course. I mean, ideally. I mean, some music does allow you to be yourself. I mean, there's certain musics that, you know, you're just basically a function. You're like a taxi driver or a plumber. I mean, you're serving a function. You're helping people, but they don't want too much personality. I mean, when you're in a taxi cab, you know, you want the driver to get you to the airport. And if you start talking to him and it's an interesting conversation, that's great. Then you can have a conversation, but you don't want to be sitting there trying to relax and have this guy all of a sudden telling you about his life or something if you're not interested. So you have to kind of be a functional player, and if you can put your personality in, that's great. But those in that kind of music, it's more or less just being totally a craftsman, not an artist, you know.
But nowadays you have to work really very hard to be on the top. What do you think about this old music world, this old music business?
I don't know.
Are you addicted to it?
Am I addicted to it? I mean, that's what I do, you know. I don't know if I'm addicted to it. I mean, you know, an addiction usually means something that you do, like heroin or alcohol, that you can't stop, even though you want to. I don't want to. So this is not an addiction for me. It's my life. It's what I do. It's what, since I was a little child, it's what I've always wanted to do. And why stop it? I love it. It's more fun for me all the time, you know? It's more fun for me now than it was earlier, because now I feel more of an expert of what I do, and I can relax when I play a little bit. I have confidence. You know, when you're younger, You're worried if everyone's going to like you, or you're going to worry if you're going to play good. When you get older, you know, you still want to play good, but you feel like you're an expert. You know what you're doing, you know? But they don't really mean much. I mean, because I don't even know who votes in those polls. To be honest with you, I've seen magazine polls where they voted for people. For instance, like Lyle Mayer's a win. I won't tell you what magazine, but he keeps on winning. I think he was winning like in the Oregon poll all the time for Oregon. He never plays the Oregon. So the polls are just means that the people that read it, and not even the people that read the magazines. I mean, just a small percentage. I've never voted in a poll in my entire life. Nobody I know has ever voted in a poll. So the nice thing is that, okay, the people that voted in the poll, whether they know what you're talking about or not, voted for you. That's a nice feeling. And it's good for the career, because then, the instrument companies would look and say, okay, this guy's popular right now. So, but in general, it doesn't matter. I don't care what other people think, because I have to do what I do.
Paul, is there any drummer who is an inspiration for you? Every drummer is that one.
Yeah, most drummers. Yeah, you know. I mean, I started out loving many different drummers. Roy Haynes, Elvin Jones.
Exactly.
You know.
Ray Haynes, Dane Moon, Jingle Bell,
yeah.
Mitch Mitchell.
Yeah, all those guys. They all had a personality. It's almost like when I see, you know, I think of them, I don't think of a drummer. I think of them. Their sound, and that's the most important thing any musician can have is an individual voice, you know, because all we do is basically hit things, you know, we hit metal and we hit, you know, plastic heads on wood cylinders, so to be able to make an identifiable statement on that is pretty incredible. It really is, out of the millions of musicians out there. So that's, when I think of those guys, yeah, they're heroes, because they, through whatever, you know, I mean, your style is based on what you can and can't do. It's based on, you know, how open you are and how physically healthy or how you're wired. I mean, some people are just naturally faster than others. Some of it's luck, some of it's talent, some of it's practice, you know. A lot, you know, and so those names are like very special in art. I mean, it's like talking about, you know, like Picasso or, you know, Dali or whoever you want to talk about. You say Salvador Dali, you know exactly what that's going to look like, you know?
Yeah, that's right. The difference, really. That's right. Paul, you play often with your wife Barbara. You wrote in songs together for groups like the Doobie Brothers and Lecter.
Right.
Any other projects?
Well, we just got back from Greece playing with the, you know, Greek guitar player Leptiris Christakis, who I played and helped produce this record for Blue Note. So we played two or three concerts in Athens the other day. And yeah, we're always doing things, you know, we're always a lot of studio sessions for people in Chicago together. We don't play live much together because I'm on the road now playing live. I don't play that much in Chicago at this point, you know. I teach mostly in Chicago, and I'll play occasional good gig, but I don't want to play a local bar right now. You know, I'd rather let my students have the opportunity to play the local bars, you know.
That's right. You are also teaching at a university. Yeah, please tell me something more about it.
Well, teaching is the greatest. I mean, by teaching, you're passing on your beliefs. It's almost like having children. And not everybody can teach. I can teach. I love teaching. I'm self-taught, so I've made many of the mistakes that I see my students make, so I'm able to fix them because I fixed them in myself. I mean, the other day at Roosevelt University, I have many students, and since I was going to be gone like these 2 weeks, I needed to make up lessons. So one Tuesday, I taught 11 hours straight. I mean, no break. 11 one-hour lessons right after a row like this. Didn't even go to the bathroom, nothing. I stayed in this one room and just taught. And when I went there, I went, oh, my God, I got to do 11 hours. How am I going to do this? And by the time I left, I had more energy than when I came in because, you know, everybody learned, and it was great. So to me, that's our future, is to teach. And I try not to make everybody the same drummer. I try not to make them like me. I mean, I can pass on my knowledge and my experience, but I try to find what they need for themselves. And each one of them is a total different, you know, different situation, different problems, different strengths, different interests. And you just try to make them discover who they really are, because that's really what the art is, you know, art making music is about, is to finally discover who you are on that instrument and present it to the world.
Paul, do you have any specific teaching methods, roots?
No, I mean, it's all, you know, it's totally like improvising. You know, obviously there's certain foundations that, you know, you need to have to be able to function in the music business and to play drums. You have to know certain things, but I have no set curriculum. I don't say, you have to do this, you have to do this. I mean, to me, you know, one person can do this way, one person can do this other way. So it's like going to the doctor when they come to me. It's like I look and say, you know, I look at you, I go, okay, yeah, you look, everything feels good, but I notice that you're twitching. I notice that, you know,
you're interesting kind of thing.
Yeah, that's like being a diagnostic. You know, diagnostic means, you know, it's like diagnosing what's going on at that time.
What the problem is.
Yeah, and not even problems, also the strengths. You know, try never to function just on the problems, because if you just say the problems, you can hurt the spirit of the musician. So you also tell them constantly the good points, you know, because you want them to feel going away like, okay, not like, oh, I suck, I'm going to quit. We never do that. You say, okay, you sound good. Okay, these are all strengths. But I think you should also practice on this too, you know. And then they feel like, okay, yeah, I can play, but yeah, you're right, I should practice this. It's always about making people feel positive, never negative.
And what would you advise students, younger players, if they want to start playing?
I don't know. Listen to music and start beating along on the table, and then if you like it, get a drum set. And then if you really like that, I'm going to get a drum set, get a good teacher, hopefully, or, you know, if you do it yourself, like, you know, make sure that you're, you know, serious, and if you look at everything as like sort of a natural motion, and that you listen to the music, and the music plays you as much as you play it, well, just, you know, I mean, that's a very, very strange question, because there's many ways to look at it. You know, if they want to become a professional musician, I'd say, well, it's very tough out there. So you better be good, or you better be lucky, or both, and you might want to have some other, you know, career too, you know, a business career or something, you know, because things are a lot different now than they were 30 years ago, but at the same time, if you love to play, just play, you know. A lot of music. machines going on, so there's not many big surprises. There's little surprises. So it made me look at the music instead of, like, obviously, you know, changing something really big. That wasn't going to happen. So I had to look at it and how can I make this interesting by changing little things all the time. So it made me realize that, you know, the details of the music became more important than the big, you know, the big blowout kind of stuff. I mean, Pat always talked about attention to detail. You know what that means, right? So, you know, I mean, it was interesting. I mean, you know, it made me constantly look to strive to find little things, littler and littler and littler, to keep it interesting, basically, you know.
But Pat always expects personal playing exactly in his way of thinking.
That's just right. He was the band leader and the composer. I mean, when you play in a band, I mean, the drums, you know, unless it's your band, it's your function of the band. You're part of the bigger picture. And the leader or the producer or the composer or the arranger, whoever's in charge of the band or in charge of the recording session, he's the boss. And if you don't like it, then you shouldn't do it, you know. So I understood that. It didn't stop me from trying to change his ideas sometimes or trying to expand his vision of music into what I thought it should be because, you know, I was always involved in it. I always try to, you know, I'm not a type of person that just sits there and just does something and just leaves. I mean, to me, when I do something, I do it 100%. So, you know, I'm always going to give somebody my input, but, you know, no, I mean, that's the way it is, you know.
It was surely a very important period in your career, Pat Metheny Group.
Of course.
Would you say the most one?
The most important?
Yeah.
Well, obviously the most unusual, you know, as far as me being a local drummer from Chicago, all of a sudden, you know, playing in the world stage, of course, that was very important, you know. And, yeah, it changes up, you know, all of a sudden people know who you are just because they know the band. As far as the most important musical thing, I don't know. I mean, I consider all the important musical things important. I mean, Earwax Control is important. Larry Coryell is important. I mean, my trio is important.
Prisoners of the War.
That was just a joke, you know, that we played, you know, two gigs. But, you know, it's all learning experience. I mean, the fact that I was with Pat so long, obviously, was really important, too. I mean, when you stay with the band a long time, I mean, it affects what you're doing, for good and bad, too. I mean, you know, it locks you in. And then people just think, oh, he's just the drummer with this band. You know, he just plays this way. It was a problem. And it's not a problem anymore, thank goodness. But it used to be a big problem, you know. People didn't think I could play a backbeat. They didn't think I could play jazz. I mean, they just thought of me as like a cymbal drummer, basically. I mean, they respected me, which is great, and they thought it was musical, which is really great. But sometimes when you play in a band a real long time, any band, not just Pat's band, people just think that's all they do, you know, that's all this guy does is play this way. But, you know, I don't regret it. It was great. It's great, you know, I mean, great musicians playing great music, seeing the world, and, you know, experience.
After these 8 years, you left Pat Metheny Group in 2001.
Just time to go. And, you know, you have to know in life when to make a change. It's just, you know, I'm not going to go into the details about it, but, you know, whenever you have to go, you have to go. Let me put it that way. You know, and, you know, I needed to grow as a musician. And, you know, my place in the band was good, but, you know, I mean, it was like, you know, I was just a drummer. I wasn't writing the songs, and, you know, so we finally had to say, okay, I'm turning 50. It's time to go. And plus, I didn't want to tour. I mean, the main thing is I just didn't want to, I mean, even though I'm touring a lot now, I go home every week, you know. I didn't want to be away for 3 months and come home for 2 weeks and go away for 3 months. I have a family now. You know, I have a daughter. When you're not married or when you don't have children, it's easier to do that. But there was many different reasons, and it was positively the right time to leave, and I don't regret it for one second.
so many countries, continents. Which audience do you like the most? I think it's an interesting question. Almost everyone esteems Japanese audience. How about you?
You know, someone asked me this yesterday at the DVD, and my answer is different than it used to be. It changes all the time. I mean, sometimes you play in a country and you go, wow, this is the greatest audience I've ever played for. And then you play there 3 years later and go, wow, this audience isn't so good this time. And then you go back and they're great. So it just depends on how the concert goes. It really does. I mean, audiences change, too. I mean, as the political climate changes, as the styles and music change, or even just the sound of the band. I mean, you play and, you might play really well, but like you said, you couldn't hear the voice for the first song. I mean, there's so many different factors that I don't really think about any style anymore, about like one audience being better than the other.
You already did more than 1,000 shows in your career, surely.
Have I? Yeah, sure.
Did any of these shows stick in your memory as a special one?
No, I mean, there was, some great... A lot of times the first time you play, the first time we played in Poland was great. 85, the audience was... That was a great audience. I mean, all the gigs, they were fantastic. But no, man, there's just too many now. I don't really... I remember nice things about certain ones and bad things about certain ones, but I don't know. I don't live in the past, man. I'm sorry. I really don't. I don't listen to old records that I did. I never listen to Pat Metheny's music. I never listen to my music even, I mean, if it's done, it's done. The only time I ever listen to it is maybe... I never listen to that. The only time I ever listen to that is like sometimes, a college will have me as a guest, and then they might want to play, Heat of the Day or something. So then I have to listen to it to remember what the arrangement is. But basically, I never listen to that stuff.
I'm interested in Earwax Control.
Earwax Control, yeah.
Let's talk about it.
That was a crazy band. I mean, sort of avant-garde, performance art trio, that we just played. Everything was improvised. We had, we had crazy instruments all the time. It was just great. I mean, I think it was could have been a very famous band if we had lived in New York. The fact that we lived in Elgin, Illinois, didn't get a chance. No one ever heard the record. But as as I've heard those records, in my lifetime, I realized that a lot of stuff that people are doing now is stuff that we were doing.
But you recorded Live in the Wars, which is John Mulder,
yeah,
and Eric Hawthorne, so coming with you.
Yeah.
It is a really great album. How do you like it?
I like that. I haven't listened to it in a long time, but there again, here's an example. We did that because I think Jazz at Go-Go magazine wanted a couple cuts for their, they always had a CD with their magazine, the Club Aquarium. So they take the thing, That was it. They take it. That night I went down there, listened to the tracks just for a second, just to say, okay, you can have this one and this one. Okay, that's finito, right? So I never listened to that thing for like 3 years or something. And then I went, one day, I found a tape. And I went, oh, wow, I wonder how that sounds. I put it on. I went, wow, it sounds really good. And I decided to make a record out of it. But that's all it was. It wasn't to make a record. Live in Warsaw was just basically just a live tape of what we had played that night, with the idea of getting one or two songs for Jazz at Go-Go's magazine.
And I know a little bit about your amazing duet with Greg Bender.
Oh, yeah.
Could you tell me something more? How did it come about?
Well, that was just, again, everything is just timing and luck and, doing the right thing. I mean, a jazz critic, a friend of mine, Neil Tesser, who's like writes for Downbeat and Playboy and everything, he told me that Greg Bendian, who is a drummer I never heard of, was coming to Chicago and that I might like to hear him. I said, okay, great. So I went to hear the club and I liked his playing. And usually when I like somebody, I just, I just go home, So this time I thought, I'll say you sounded great or whatever. So I went backstage. I said, man, you sound great. And then he said, wow, yeah, thanks. And, he knew who I was. And he said, I'll be coming back to Chicago in like 2 months or something. Maybe we can get together and play. That's great. And then he came in, and we went in my basement, and I recorded the thing, and it sounded really good. You know, we listened back. It was like we felt like we were, it's like me and Apostolos, you know, felt natural playing drum duets. So then we did a couple more gigs where people taped it, and we just put it out. That's about it.
And let's talk about Prisoner of the War. Was it the first important project?
No, it wasn't an important project at all. All that was you know, like Gene Krupa and Buddy Rich, the older drummers, they used to put their initials on the bass drum. Gene Krupa, GK, Buddy Rich, BR. So when I got my first drum set, I had PW on there. So I was in, you know, freshman in high school or whatever. You know, I just got this drum set. And a friend of mine played a little bit of it. He had a really bad organ in his house. So we just played, and we did what one gig or two gigs, and we just called Prisoners of War because it said PW on the bass drum. That's the extent of that.
I'm impressed. I'm still impressed with albums that you recorded with Kurt Elling. Close Your Eyes.
Yeah, I haven't listened to those in years either.
Is Love, The Messenger, or Man in the Air.
Right.
How did you like this cooperation with Kurt Elling?
Oh, that was great. I mean, Kurt's real talented, and he was also kind of young. And Lawrence Hobgood and I, you know, Lawrence is a really good piano player, a good friend, and he kind of got me in the band that also helped produce it because they didn't have much experience in the studio at that time. And that was it. You know, we went in, we played this stuff. It's funny because, I mean, I thought those records were good. I mean, I'm surprised that they went and got that big. I mean, Kurt became pretty well known. He's really talented. He sounds great. But it's also that, you know, there weren't that many jazz men, jazz singers, basically. So he did this unusual thing at a time, like I said, timing is everything, where there weren't that many guys singing jazz. And the combination of that plus the fact that he was actually good at what he did and was ready at it, you know, he got really well known. So, you know, it was good. You know, we're still friends, and sometimes I play with him. You know, I'm not his normal drummer. I don't have time to do that even if I could, but it's like, I know, I wish him luck.
When I listen to Bang,
yeah,
I cannot imagine that there's playing drummer of such albums like The Road to You or Imaginary Day.
Of course,
such different music.
Yeah, well, of course. I'm going to say I'm proud of anything. I have many different sides, you know. I mean, they're all me, but, you know, I'm not narrow as far as like my taste is as far as what I do. And that's good, you know, that's just about being open, you know. I mean, anybody can do that. You just have to be open to the possibilities. And if you open yourself, then things present themselves, hopefully. Simon and Bar Group. They weren't fusion, but it was sort of like ECM, kind of like Pat. And we played a gig, and we just liked each other. We just played really well, and we kind of stayed in touch with each other. And then once, he always told me, when you leave Pat, you can play with me, you know? So it was just that simple. And then also, Neil Tesser, who I said earlier, you know, was this writer, he got me and Larry Gray and Larry Coryell together to play the Jazz Showcase. He thought that would be a good trio. And it was, and we did what we did.
You have worked with the best Polish trumpeter, Tomasz Stańko.
Yeah, just a little bit. I mean, not really gigs, I think.
How did you find the
Polish project? Well, no, I mean, this was more just a jam session kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, it was not like, you know, he sounded great. I like his style. I think he's really got a unique voice, you know. I don't know him as a person, really. But it's great that he's successful right now. It's cool. You know, I'm always happy when somebody that's different ends up finding success. I think it's really good, you know. He's not trying to be smooth jazz or not trying to, you know, be like, you know, Hollywood star kind of look, right? He's just this guy that just, he's his own little, he's not little, he's just his own kind of personality, look, style, sound, everything. It's great. Music's always been important to me, but, you know, my wife has always been important to me, too. And then when you have a daughter, that's another thing. So, you know, it's more responsibilities, but it also brings a lot more love and a lot more, you know, good things, you know. And it's also, again, like, it's like you see the future, you know. So you want this person to carry on not only what you are, because, you know, you don't want to make them into what you are necessarily. You want them to be better than you are. And once you do that, you know, it's just a beautiful thing to watch your own personality grow. It's undescribable.
Exactly. So growing up around you, that's how you listen to a lot of music at such a your age.
Oh, of course. She always did. Yeah, she loves music. She's great. You know, I mean,
does she play?
Yeah, she plays piano and guitar. And I told you she's got her own CD out. Now it's funny because she won't let me give that CD to anybody because she's embarrassed about it. She says, oh, that's baby music.